We've been talking with Gary Witazek for years. First as the CEO of CyrusOne, the gigantic data center company that was turned around and sold for about $15 billion. Now he's out. He's got a new gig in RV storage called Rec Nation, but he's also still in the data center business. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk to him about right now. It's good to have you with us.
Yeah, good to talk to you again, Dave.
This data center, I mean, you were in data centers before it was fashionable. Now it's really fashionable. That's all I hear about. I mean, they're taking the old Dallas Morning News headquarters and turning it into a data center. So you're building them, though, with a group around the world right now. So the demand is everywhere?
Yeah, it's a global phenomenon. I mean, the AI trend is just enormous. I mean, current estimates are maybe $2 trillion of capital required to go build out all the infrastructure required to deliver all the AI, models that are required to power just about everything in your life.
ARC Data Centers and Nextra and Carlyle Group, and everybody's involved in this right now. But for the ones that you've got, this new and Singapore-based Day One, tell me about that. Any challenges raising money for that? Everybody just pouring to you?
No. So Day One was basically the data center company that we set up as part of GDS. So GDS was a company that I have been involved with, for a really long time. Actually, at CyrusOne, I had acquired 10% of that company. So this is a Chinese-based NASDAQ-listed data center company, the largest operator in China, just a great team, really doing phenomenal stuff. But what happened with all of the political tensions between China and US, that stock came under a tremendous amount of pressure. But meanwhile, we saw the opportunity growing. We had great customer relationships. So we decided that we were going to pursue growth outside of mainland China. And we set up this company called Day One a couple years ago. And, officially kind of broke it open in January of 24 when we raised some outside capital. So it was a wholly owned subsidiary of GDS. And now through the capital raises that we've done over the last year, we've raised, close to $2 billion. Now GDS.
That's astounding. I mean, just casually raised $2 billion without a lot of trouble.
Yeah. It was definitely well subscribed. I mean, in this latest round that we did, we have SoftBank came in, Masa came in, Ken Griffith actually in his personal ownership came in, Coatue, Baupost, like just tremendous investors that had come in over the last year. And now that company, we're currently in five or six countries outside of mainland China, throughout Southeast Asia, and also looking at expanding into Europe. So it's been going really, really well. That company is worth about $4 billion, $4.5 billion now. So it's grown dramatically. And our ownership stake at GDS in it is about 35%. So, about $7 or $8 of the share price of GDS is attributable to the value that we've just created in this new business.
So how do you pick where to build data centers? Do you wait for the demand and somebody tells you, we need something here and we'll be your tenant for a long time? Or do you just sort of build it and hope they come?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an iterative process. I mean, we're looking for a great location. So the site selection process hasn't really changed much. The bigger difference now is that the scale of it has increased. So we're looking at locations that have a lot of power availability, land, so we can deliver lots of data centers over time. But other than that, it's kind of like the same thing that we've been looking at historically. It's just the scale of it has changed quite dramatically. I mean, we've done in this new Day One business, we've basically have built and sold about 500 megawatts of power. We've got about a gigawatt of power available that we're going to be building out. So, and we just continue to grow.
Do you try to, so you try to be close to the power? I mean, that's, I've heard that a lot of people are trying to rent space or build next to, nuclear power plants. Because that land is unused and you can't be closer to the power than that.
Well, yeah, it's funny you mention that because that was actually probably the only data center project that I was more operationally involved with a company called Talon Energy, which is an energy company based in Houston. And I was helping them to develop the data center next to the nuclear plant in Pennsylvania. So that company was called Cumulus Data Center, and I was involved in that from inception. And, you know, Talon Energy, and I worked through a bankruptcy reorganization there. I was one of the two independent board members helping that company go through the bankruptcy reorganization. But Cumulus Data Center was the company that we built, and that was actually sold to Amazon. So the first nuclear data center deal in the country was that one. Subsequent to what we did there, Microsoft bought 3 Mile Island.
Right.
And now is also in that same space as well.
So I'll leave this alone for a minute, but like I say, all I hear about is data centers. Dallas Morning News, years ago, the InfoMart turned into a data center and everything else. At some point, do you have, I mean, supply and demand, can you have too much capacity?
Oh, absolutely. So the space right now is incredibly frothy. There is just, you know, tons and tons of capital pouring into this space. Yeah. And I think what you see in just historically, like most bubbles, right? You know, when you have a ridiculous amount of capital going in, everyone thinking that demand is going to be unbridled and never, you know, it never goes down. That's not the case. I mean, earlier in my career, I worked in a semiconductor company that was dominating mobile chip technology, so mobile phones, as well as optoelectronics for when the internet was first being created, right? And we were doing phenomenally well, 50, 60% growth until we weren't, right? And then, you know, when that bubble broke, like it was, the downside was quick, severe, hard, really difficult to work through. But you know, if I put in context of, you know, 25 years ago when I was working at that company, it had the same setup here. You had this disruptive technology, which was wireless phones, as well as the internet, which everyone thought was going to transform world mankind. And it did, right? So I don't think there was any question about the demand profile being there, but there was a lot of carnage left during that that pullback.
And so you think there will be on this too?
Oh yeah, without a question, right? There's going to be the same type of carnage here. There's going to be oversupply, you know, and it'll take some time to work through that. And everyone has the same thing. Like you can never lose money. Like it's the same. I've heard the same story over and over again. So you know, you have to be smarter about it. I think, you know, there's still big questions marks of like, you know, can you monetize all the AI applications out there, and is that going to justify, you know, all the capital being spent? Because like right now, I mean, the big tech companies, the Microsofts, Amazons, Microsofts of the world, they're spending roughly $300 billion a year, which, you know, for most folks, like that's an incredibly large number. However, $300 billion to those companies is not really that significant, right? I mean, it's like maybe 1 or 2% of their market cap. And, you know, they're looking at it more from the upside of like, I've got to be in this game and make these bets to ensure that I have some type of optionality in terms of my future of the company. Because they don't know what the future has in store for them, but they know that if they are not making those investments, then they're certain to not be able to play in that game, right? And so I think everyone else is looking at this as saying that it can never go south. And, you know, and I think that's somewhat of a fallacy. I think like,
is it imminent? I mean, you say it's frothy right now. So
it's incredibly frothy.
And is it overbuilt in some areas and not others? I mean, you guys are operating in Asia, and it seems like
No, that's the thing. Like all the capacity that is being built right now is being consumed. And in fact, all of the big tech companies were pre-buying capacity in anticipation of what they thought they may need in the future, right? Like, so it's somewhat of a defensive move, but you know, they can easily just turn that off. They can just look back and say, okay, well, we probably have enough for a while and just not, you know, not buy anymore. And unlike the dot-com boom, you know, which just saw a number of huge bankruptcies in terms of, like, you know, the main purchases. We're not going to see that here. I mean, these are you know, really strong companies, you know, multi-trillion dollar type companies.
It's so beginning to show up in little limited partnerships and things like that.
Absolutely. You know, particularly being in Texas, like, you know, everyone comes up to me all the time, like, hey, I got 100 acres here next to a power line. Can we build the data center? This happens. I get those calls once a week in Texas here, just because we have a, you know, a high number of real estate folks here and a lot of energy. So everyone thinks they're a data center developer. And I'm like, well, guys, like, it takes a little more.
You know, this used to be sort of a quasi boring subject. It is not anymore. And you never make it boring. Gary Vitasic is, like I say, was in data centers before, long before it was cool. And he's also in rec centers that are really building Rec Nation. And we didn't even get to talk about that. Will you come back and we'll talk about it?
Yeah, sure. Happy to talk about that.
All right. For more of our conversation, go to KRLD.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.